When KUER's Lee Hale produced the story about textbooks a few weeks ago, I think it got people's attention because it's one of those universal gripes about the college experience, having to buy these big, bulky, ridiculously expensive books. Lee framed the story in the context of the rising costs of higher education. Last year, about 44 million students owed more than $1 trillion in loans. A trillion. And for a lot of these students, many of them who are working their way through school or have kids to take care of, books are another one of those costs they just have to worry about, along with gas and groceries. It is not unusual to pay more than $1,000 a year on textbooks. This is More to Say. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Lee Hale is here with me to talk more about this story. Lee, hey.
Hey.
So, I mean, is this what you found, that if you are in school or if you were in school, everyone basically complains about textbooks?
Everyone. And I think anyone can relate to the feeling of, I mean, you know college costs money, right? You know that there's going to be books and supplies costs, but you don't know until you get that little sheet of paper, whenever that comes, after you've, you know, registered for classes and you go to the bookstore and you think, whoa.
Yeah.
I didn't realize this one class I was just a little bit interested in is now going to cost me $200.
Yeah.
Plus this, plus that. And it's I remember the feeling being in the college bookstore and just this pit in my stomach.
Right.
Like, what am I going to do? Especially as a young college freshman when I still wasn't quite sure how to negotiate what I was asking for my parents and I didn't have a job yet.
Yeah.
It's like this panic, right? And I come from like good means. So I think I wanted to speak to that anxiety. I think that is really universal if you've gone to college. It's just whether it scares you or whether it's just frustrating, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
But where did you start for the story, this idea?
What got me interested initially, this was early last year, I did a little reporting on a study from Brigham Young University about comparing textbooks and kind of what they called open resources, basically professors using the internet, this thing called the internet, to gather some free resources together for their students instead of a textbook. And through their study, they found basically that the students didn't lack anything. In fact, it was kind of a benefit to them,
yeah.
Which, you know, kind of made sense to me because I thought, well, these professors are clearly putting a lot of time into it. But then that thought kind of evolved in my mind. I think it was a quote that somebody said to me, which was, it's a moral obligation to make college affordable for all students. And a big part of that affordability is textbooks. And that kind of stuck with me. I thought, you know what? That makes sense. This is a thing. If this can keep a kid out of school, if a textbook cost can keep a kid out of school, then what are colleges doing to alleviate that?
Yeah.
Are they doing anything?
One of the things that was interesting about your story was kind of the type of student that you focused on. So you spent a lot of time at the Salt Lake Community College rather than another university. And I'm guessing there was a purpose to that.
Well, you think about community college students and oftentimes they are literally scraping pennies to make it work, right?
Yeah.
They're working, maybe they're going to school part-time, they're working part-time. They feel every cost. And thankfully, Salt Lake Community College, or SLIC has very, very affordable tuition. And your textbooks could be, you know, a huge chunk of that, right? Your textbook costs,
yeah,
just of what you overall end up paying. So I was curious about that, because if there's somebody who's going to feel the pain the most and this is going to really affect them, it'll probably be at that level.
Let's talk about Crystal. How did you find Crystal?
Crystal Fugel. I went to a math class, and she came in late, and she was a little flustered because she was late, but she promptly took out all of her supplies on the table, and she just seemed like very, like one of those students who was like really doing her best.
Yeah.
Just, she had, you know, and she was asking questions, and she's a little older, and I just immediately was fascinated with her.
I'm 35. I'm a single mom of four little girls, and I'm a college student.
She recently left a bad marriage, or at least it was kind of a messy divorce, and she said she was kind of running with her kids.
I was just used to being an at-home mom and wife, and I mean, I've had other jobs and things before, but I wanted to do something that made a difference and that I could do quickly, and being able to go to Salt Lake Community College gave me that opportunity because there's a wide variety of classes, and I want to go into medical, I want to help kids, and that's just my goal. I've had to take a couple of psychology classes, a lot of English classes. One semester, it came up to about $560.
Oh, just textbooks?
for just textbooks that wasn't including like things for reports, time and gas to be able to do like
she didn't anticipate to go to school this point in life, but she's there. And you know, I was asking questions about textbooks, but then we started talking just about her life, you know, and just the struggle of what it means for her to be in school. And I realized that is really what we're talking about. Textbooks cost isn't really the thing here. It's this woman who, you know, doesn't have the money to pay for daycare for her kids and just really wants to get a degree of some sort.
It's hard because I want my girls to know that they can succeed. I want them to know that they can do a lot more, that they can be able to go to college, and I'm that example that they have. So when I get discouraged, they know. They can feel it. They can emphasize with it.
That stuck with me. I feel like they're...
Yeah, it's because it's not really about, as you said, textbooks. Textbooks represent something else, and it's something kind of big, and that is, I think, as the story relates, it's about access to education.
Right. I mean, ideally what a textbook should do is just to help your learning process, right? This should aid you in what you do. And I think for someone like Crystal, she said specifically, there's been times where, maybe you can relate to this, I bought the textbook, we use it 2 or 3 times during the semester. And she said, for some other student, maybe that's fine, but for me, I'm looking at meals that could have been.
When you're having to worry about costs and things, then you have to worry about gas, and then you have to worry, okay, am I going to be able to maybe get breakfast since I'm running all my kids around and trying to go to college and things, having to go to the library, having to go do studying and things.
You know, she's willing to make the sacrifice, but she needs to know why she's making the sacrifice.
Yeah.
But thankfully for her, she's at a school that is working to make that cost lower.
Okay, so let's talk about the people who are trying to kind of find a solution around this. Great character in your piece, Jason Pickabance is his name. He's kind of this, I think you've described him as this evangelist for
this
program.
Right, and he likes that title. He likes being the, you know, the word he uses, open, because open textbooks are these free, openly sourced online textbooks. And he's a former professor who just, I think he just gets excited about saving students money.
Students are benefiting in two ways. They're benefiting if they are actually in a section that has open content, they're saving themselves like $100. But I think they're also benefiting more broadly, because what the Open Content Initiative is doing both locally and nationally is it's introducing competition, right? And it's forcing the entire industry to be more responsive, both in terms of price, in terms of like the real value proposition.
I think he, along with some colleagues at Slick, made a goal of saving students $5 million over like a 5-year span. I think they're close to meeting that goal. But his goal is basically simple. It's to meet with teachers who are interested and to invite them to consider an open textbook.
You know, when I say open, it still conjures in the minds of some people or some professors kind of like poorly formatted PDFs or junky websites, Wikipedia entries, and they think this can't be as good. And I always try to emphasize again and again my point about the professionalization of open, that open has gotten good.
He works as like this mentor with some teachers, and a lot of teachers have taken him up on it. Some don't want to do the work. Textbooks make life easy for a professor.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you can use a textbook as your guide. You can do lesson plans off of it, and you can use the same one almost every, you know, year after year after year. But he's willing, I mean, he's looking for professors who are willing to take on that challenge.
The whole community college movement defines itself as an open access movement, and it was designed to really spread the opportunity of higher ed to people for whom higher ed wasn't an option, right, a generation or two ago. And the way in which we've kind of unthinkingly violated some of the tenets of that mission by layering on top of what we do in expensive textbooks. You know, you don't go working into the community college space if you don't really believe in that mission typically. And so that's been a kind of an effective appeal, I think, by drawing the connection between what kind of institution we are and then the open content movement. And I think that they're kind of consistent movements.
We want to take a moment to shout out The Good Line for supporting this podcast. If you're building a brand, these guys can help you with websites, film, design. They're all about finding and telling stories that bring together a full brand experience. Check out the new Radio West Films website to find out what that means, Or you can see what else they do at thegoodline.com.
What did you find about publishing companies? I mean, if they're making so much money, or had traditionally, they make a ton, I think, if I get it right.
Right.
Why would they go along with this?
Well, I think the ones that are going along with it are doing so reluctantly.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, this billion-dollar industry, I think that we're at the point now where they have to at least acknowledge it. If you go to a website of Pearson or Cengage, these are two big top publishing companies, they do have like an OER page, right? An open resource page. And, you know, with their optimistic copy that they've written on this page, it sounds like we're really open to this. We're leaning into it. We're looking at other options. Cengage, for instance, has kind of this, a few open textbooks they're offering now, and you pay $30 instead of, you know, $100 or $200. And what you get is this kind of this interactive daily worksheet that goes in tandem with your class. And I think they're thinking about what they have to offer in this kind of post-tangible publishing world. That's a big part of it too, is students don't have textbooks in their hands these days.
Yeah, everything's virtual.
Even if you're buying them, usually you're uploading it to your laptop.
Yep.
So I think that they are accepting that they have to make the change, but they're doing so reluctantly.
You want to say something about that kind of weird little ironic moment in this teacher Brenda Gardner's class where they're solving a math problem about using the price of textbooks?
Right. So Brenda Gardner, she's an example of a teacher at Slick who was willing, right, to save her students some money. And I should say that it was a lot of work. It took her 3 years with some of her colleagues to create an online textbook they felt like was up to par with the textbooks they'd used in the past.
And I didn't want to share anything that I didn't think was great, right? And also I wanted it to be reviewed by my peers. I don't want to...
And that was a lot of work. Also, Slick was willing to compensate them. I mean, they were compensated hourly for some of that work. Probably not to the degree of the work they put in, but they wanted to incentivize it that way.
Yeah.
So I was in her class, and we were talking, and they just happened to be talking about costs and percentages. And I was there kind of recording, and she was doing some mock-up questions on the board, and she looked at me, and she said, "Oh, I have an idea."
It was $120 for a new math textbook. How much did you guys pay this semester?
She put in the price of the old textbook with the new textbook price, which was about $7, and, you know, calculated the difference. The funny thing was, it seemed a little bit lost on the students.
And so what would we tell our reporter as far as what percent of the original price are we paying?
They didn't know anything different.
Yeah.
They only knew the $7 cost.
We're paying 6% of the original price now in this class. What percent are we saving?
They didn't realize that the $80, $120, 600-page textbook cost.
Right.
Which says something, doesn't it, that you can't stop the transformation in technology. It's going to change. Teachers can embrace it or not, but it's moving, right?
Right. And so, yeah, so a student these days might think, well, of course it's going to be online. Of course it's going to be this interactive thing. Also, it just reinstates the fact that teaching is a thankless job.
Yeah.
Even when you're saving students money, you're not always going to get the validation.
Right.
So don't look for the validation there.
Yeah.
But she, you know, she has college students in her family, her children. She has triplets that are at school right now.
Yeah.
And so a big motivating factor for her for providing that was like, I have to help my kids buy textbooks every year.
But even still, I feel completely privileged. You know, I think my children are completely privileged. Right? Because I hear these stories from the students at the community college, they aren't just your traditional students. They have kids. They are working full time. They are fitting in one or two classes where they can. You know, things are tight. We have a policy that every 3 years we are supposed to go through a textbook review. And I never thought to even ask the publisher what the cost was. You know, and I look back on that with shame, and like, why didn't I ask what the cost of that textbook was going to be, right? But I should know what I'm asking my students. If I feel like this is the best resource for them, I should know that it's going to cost them X amount of dollars.
So let's come back to Crystal. How has this potentially changed her life?
Well, you know, as I make that point about being a thankless thing, she might be a big exception. She realizes, maybe because she's older and more mature, she realizes that it is unique when she has a class like Brenda's, because she's in Brenda's math class.
What was the total textbook cost of the semester for you?
So I actually didn't pay for anything for my textbooks, other than I just bought supplies like my calculator, pencils, and notebooks. And that was really great because I was able to get my kids into some curricular activities by saving a lot of the money that I normally wouldn't. I feel like I can actually take more classes and be able to do more. And
she says it's kind of just this, like, this extra push, this extra boost. The thing, you know, when you think about all the things working against her, all of the elements that could, you know, if she were to give up on college right now, I think there's a ton of people in her life that would say, well, we get it, we understand. And that was one instance where she felt like it was somebody kind of rooting for her, cheering for her. And I think it's one of the reasons that she's still there, and I think it's one of the reasons she'll keep with it.
Kay Weyersley Hale. Lee, thanks.
Thanks.
More to Say is a production of KUER News. You'll find Lee's original story in the show notes and at KUER.org. Doug Fabrizio is our host, Timothy Slover produces, and today's guest, Lee Hale, also edits the show. Be sure to leave us a review, and thanks for listening.